Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
There's a red moon rising.
Curry helps out. Smith, pass right through the hands of Curry. James, the two-handed slam.
On the Cuyahoga River.
James on the drive. Foul, layup, count it, and one.
Rolling into Cleveland to the lake.
Five to shoot. Azeli again goes back up on him. James steps back for three. Puts it in. LeBron James from downtown.
There's a red moon rising on the Cuyahoga River, rolling into Cleveland to the lake.
Irving drives on Green, gets inside, off balance, comes up short, gets his own rebound and puts it back. Larry Irving, the second effort.
There's an orange barge winding down the Cuyahoga River. Rolling into Cleveland to the lake.
Irving drives, hop step inside, floats it up, misses. Rebound taken by Iguodala. Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James.
Oh, my goodness.
Cleveland, city of light, city of
And they're putting Curry in the pick and roll, trying to get him on Irving. Irving and Curry, one-on-one. Irving puts it up.
It's good! Kyrie Irving from downtown!
Irving now with 26 and back in Cleveland. These fans realize they're 10.6 seconds away now from a championship.
Cleveland, even now I can remember. Call the Cuyahoga River. Smoking through my dreams.
Trying to stay with Curry. Catches. One dribble. Steps back. Puts up a three. Won't go. Rebound tip taken by Spates. Final seconds. It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
Burn on, big river. Burn on.
I understood what the people of Northeast Ohio have been through the last 50-plus years. I kept it at bay. I never stressed the fact that I didn't feel the pressure, that none of those things, so it always kept me level-headed. But I understood what everyone in Northeast Ohio have been through the last 50-plus years, and I'm happy to be a part of history. I can't wait to get back home.
Now the Lord can make you tumble. The Lord can make you turn. The Lord can make you overflow. Lord can make you burn.
I just knew what we was capable of, even being down 3-1 versus the greatest regular season team ever. You know, 73-9, and everybody counted us out, and that's when we strive the most, when everybody counts us out. And that's definitely when I strive the most, when everybody counts me out.
Burn on, big river. Burn on.
I gave everything that I had. I poured my heart, my blood, my sweat, my tears to this game, and Against all odds, I don't know why we want to take the hardest road. I don't know why the man above gives me the hardest road, but it's nothing the man above don't put you in situations that you can't handle. And I just kept that same positive attitude, like, instead of saying, why me, they're saying, this is what he want me to do. And, Cleveland, this is for you.
No. Big river, burn on.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Wow. To say Jim Cushlin now did himself on today's montage is an understatement. Jim Cushlin, step up. Cush, take a bow. That is a very well done.
I was trying all night and all morning to think how I could make it different. And
Jim, I didn't hear you. That was low. What was that?
I was trying all last night and all this morning to try to think, how could I make a little bit different one today?
Something
and that
special.
Popped in my head. And for the first time in my life, that song did not make me sad.
Welcome to this year. It is always, no, welcome to next year, I guess is the best way to say it. It's what it is, has always been. I hope our Detroit fans, everybody listening here in Northwest Ohio or Southeast Michigan or wherever you might be, Indiana, I hope you'll understand. You see, you have a history with this. Your Bad Boys Pistons, your Red Wings, your Tigers have all won championships. I know the Lions are just about as futile and frustrating as the Browns are, maybe a little bit more so, I don't know. But you understand championships in recent history. And when you look at what your friends to the east are doing out in Cleveland, understand they have not had an opportunity. I tweeted yesterday at the end of that game, after the drought officially ended, I tweeted a fictitious quote from the mayor of the city of Cleveland saying, "Holy crap, do we have anybody here who knows how to throw a parade?"
I didn't see that. Well, that was good.
Because they've never had to do it before. I mean, you know, did they do it back in 1964? I don't know.
One I could really think of, because I was there for it, was for the 95 Indians.
Even though they didn't actually win it.
Yes, I remember, because I crushed a bush on Superior Avenue. I still remember that to this day.
Which is just silly. I mean, championship parades are supposed to be after championships. But I digress. We need to talk to somebody old enough to remember what they did in 64 the last time they won a championship. So with that, let's go to our friend Dennis Maniloff, D-Man, who's joining us from Cleveland, where they greeted the hometown heroes after a plane ride. They stopped over last night in Vegas. They didn't, arrive at 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning, which is often the case in these cross-country championship return flights. They stopped off in Vegas, got back sometime around 11 or 11:30 or so this morning, greeted by just a thunderous ovation of fans. They had a stage set up there at the airport out in Cleveland. That's where Dennis Maniloff, who writes for the Cleveland Plain Dealer and the Northeast Ohio Media Group, as well as his own books, including From A to Z, Andrew's Disastadil. D-Man, we need an old voice here. You remember what 64 was like, right?
Sure I do. Not. Don't make me any older than I already am. I was not born by 64.
I know. I'm just messing, man. But seriously, I mean, this is such a foreign experience for all of us. It's surreal. Jim Cushlin has Cleveland roots. I, of course, do. You are there now. Anybody who has Cleveland roots or Cleveland loyalties, this is something that they have been waiting for, that we have been waiting for, D-Man, obviously, literally for the 52 years since 1964, but for some of us our whole lives, for some of our fathers the vast majority of their lives, wanting to see a title before they die. Grandfathers remember the 64 title. So this is a surreal experience for all of us. How are you handling it? How are you feeling right now? How were you feeling when that final horn sounded last night?
Am I actually talking to you, Bob? Is this real? Are we doing this? This is just, it's remarkable. I can't even believe it. Guys like you and I, Bob, not only were we sports fans growing up in Northeast Ohio, but we wound up going into the media and covering these teams. So it's in addition to, your fandom early was your professional duties around these guys and around these teams. So it's just, there's so many layers to it. It's remarkable and stunning and magnificent and all that. I'm just thrilled for this region and, Northeast Ohio. And my favorite moment of all the many, many, many great moments from last night was when LeBron said, and he yelled, "This is for you, Cleveland," or "Cleveland," and then "This is for you." And that was just, that one sent chills up my spine.
Yeah, it did mine too, Dennis. And there's so many angles, obviously, that we can cover here, and it's hard to get through them all. When you talk about, when he says this is for you, a great gesture by LeBron James, but it's so much more true than maybe even he realizes. I started talking about this morning and talking to a lot of people, and as great as it is to say the Cleveland Cavaliers are world champions, fighting back against literally all odds, a 73-win team, a 3-1 deficit that no one has overcome in the finals in the history of the sport before, all of those things. As great as it is to say they are champions, the Cavaliers, I really think the city won a championship much more than the franchise that represents that city did, because the city has taken so many public shots for so many years, for the Burning River that was referenced in that song, to being led to default by the mayor, Dennis Kucinich, in the 70s there, to obviously all of the sports near misses, the drive, the fumble, the shot, the on and on and on, Mesa in the ninth inning in 97, the whole, you know, the whole thing. It has just taken so many shots for them to wake up. The folks out there, either who are in Cleveland where you are, or who are just Cleveland loyalists, those with roots, you know, those people woke up today feeling for the first time what so many other people have felt in other cities for the last five decades. They woke up feeling like champions, and more so than the Cavaliers, the city and the fans felt that.
Yeah, there's no question, and that's, I was watching ESPN's coverage basically all night and this morning and in the afternoon, and that's how they were treating it. You know, this was a victory for the city. I mean, not that, you know, disrespecting the Cavs franchise, but just saying that it was bigger than just the NBA when it came to this particular title. This was a title for Cleveland. It was a title to end a ridiculous half-century drought. It was executed by, you know, a native son, you know, a local guy, who happens to be one of the greatest of all time at what he does. And, you know, in my mind, I mean, it's one of the greatest called shots in professional sports history. When you consider that LeBron said, you know, I'm coming home and I'm going to win a title, for you guys. And we're like, yeah, okay. I mean, you know, as much as I like LeBron, as you know, Bob, I'm sitting there going, all right, LeBron, good luck with that. And look what happens in his second season.
D-Man, let's talk about the game. Let's talk about Game 7. This was the one that nobody thought they could win. You and I talked, obviously, after Game 5, the stay-alive game, unbelievable. They won on Golden State's home court, which is you know, supposed to be impossible to do. Obviously, they had only lost three times in the regular season and playoffs on that floor, all season and playoffs long. They won Game 5. You and I talked, and we felt like, well, that was the shot that they had, and good for them, but now they're going to lose it on their home floor. Then, of course, well, even if they do manage to win Game 6 on their home floor, you got to go back and beat them two times, two straight times on their floor. That can't happen, yet here we sit. What happened? How did the Cavaliers become such effective giant slayers, if indeed you want to call a team that had 73 wins and was the defending champion and had a 3-1 series lead a giant? How did they do that?
Well, I think it came in two parts, Bob. Number one, after going down 2-0 in the manner in which they did, including that second game blowout, they're flying home, and I'm betting they're saying to themselves, you know, we can continue down this path and continue to play the way we're playing, where we can make serious changes in our approach. And I believe that, based on what I saw in games 4 through 7, 3 through 7, the change was, that a major change was, that they decided to play the way the Warriors play, which is to say physical, okay? And by physical, I mean you grab, you clutch, you push, you pull, you tug when necessary. And what you do is you force the referees to make decisions on what a foul is and what a foul isn't. And part of that is the illegal screen game. The Cavaliers adopted the Warriors' pet, which is the illegal screen game. And they said, you know what, if you're going to do it to us, we're going to do it to you until and unless our guys foul out. And I think that shocked the Warriors. It started to take shape in Game 3, which was a win. Cavs were looking good in Game 4, and then petered out in the fourth quarter. Credit the Warriors for taking that. And then, of course, Cavs 5, 6, and 7. So, basically, for four and three quarters games, that physical philosophy change and that physical implementation paid off huge. And then the second part is, the Warriors' arrogance, okay? clearly the Warriors thought they were going to roll this thing. I mean, I did, I'll admit, but I'm not playing, you know, and I'm not, you know, I'm not sitting there talking smack about the Cavaliers. Warriors run their mouths after game two. They run their mouths after game four when they're up 3-1. Klay Thompson feels good enough about himself to start questioning LeBron's manhood. And you know what? He poked the bear. He poked the king. And the Warriors got what their arrogance brought them, which was a beatdown in the last three games. Now, a beatdown. I mean, it wasn't a rout in any way in game seven. And I don't, and what was it? Five wasn't a rout either. But the bottom line is the Warriors just felt too good about themselves and decided to express that to the world and got too comfortable. And the Cavaliers made him pay for it.
At what point was it that Klay Thompson was saying that we would have beaten the Showtime Lakers of Michael Thompson, his father? Was that after game two? Was that when they were up 2-0 and just feeling all good and full of themselves?
It was either after two or four, Bob, because, you know, I think the comments that he made about LeBron were, yeah, they were in leading up to game five when after Draymond had clearly hit LeBron in the groin, and I think it was maybe the question was still whether he was going to be suspended for game five, and Thompson says, oh, yeah, he got his feelings hurt and all that kind of stuff. But you're right, there was also the reference to the Showtime Lakers. I mean, these guys were thinking that they were going to walk over the Cavaliers. And, by the way, the Warriors wanted to make it hurt, okay? They wanted to crush the Cavaliers because they were tired of hearing for a year how, you know, last season's title was tainted a bit since the Cavaliers were injured. So they wanted to smack down the fully loaded Cavs, and they decided to talk about it before the series was over.
Yeah, they did, and you're right on every count there. That's exactly what they wanted. They were playing, you know, with an anger, and I think, what did they call it after Draymond got suspended? A simmering rage, a simmering fury is what all of the media in the Bay Area called it. They're going to use this to propel themselves, win this thing for Draymond because of LeBron being a crybaby and all that stuff. You're right. They felt slighted. They felt somehow that a team that had been nonstop praised by the national media for virtually two solid calendar years, they felt slighted. And they wanted to make the Cavaliers pay. And you know what happened, obviously, in the end, Dennis, is that the doubters were right. That had Kyrie been available last season for seven games, had Kevin Love not had his arm pulled out of its socket by Kelly Olynyk, the stop that he had on Steph Curry late yesterday when Curry was looking for that three, you know, the 14 rebounds, the second chance opportunities, you know, those are two extraordinarily large pieces of what the Cavaliers puzzle was. They weren't there, and this year I think the Cavaliers showed that, you know what, that ring you are wearing has a little bit of tarnish on it. I see a little bit of tarnish on the gold. Looks like those diamonds, a few of them might be zircons, because you really didn't do last year what you think you did. We just proved it this year.
Right. I'm so glad the order of titles is what it was. You know, I so much prefer that the Cavs win this year and the Warriors, if it had to happen this way, you know, Cavs win this year, Warriors win last year, as opposed to the other way around. Because now the Cavs can do, as you said, Bob, they can say, all right, if you guys want to think that our fully loaded Cavs couldn't have beaten you guys, then go, that's your prerogative. Go ahead. But you saw what happened. We ran you down, when we were healthy. And, you know, but here's the other thing, Bob, too. The Warriors did not react well. In fact, they reacted horribly to when the Cavaliers decided to play like they do. And you saw the temper tantrums and the yelling and the whining and the moaning and the complaining and the refs are against us and the NBA's rigged and the mouthpieces getting thrown. I mean, you know, you saw them acting like little children when some opponent dared to hit them and push them and shove them and illegal screen them out of the way. And they didn't like it. And they, you know, clearly I don't think they liked it either when Oak City was doing it to them. And now maybe the rest of the league is going to take notice and say, you know what? As talented as these guys are, the way you play them, the way you compete with them, is not to run with them and not to try to outshoot them from three-point range. The way you compete with them and perhaps beat them is play them hard, play them physical. Take what you have available and make them feel you. And I think that was the big thing with Steph Curry. He felt the pain of the Cavaliers every time he went down the court.
I think that's spot on, and that's exactly why so many of us were saying this all-time greatness nonsense needed to stop, that they could have run the 95-96 Bulls off the court, that they could have handled the Showtime Lakers, that they could have handled the Pistons Bad Boys of the 90s, their back-to-back time. There's no way a guy like Steph Curry, guy like Klay Thompson, these guys who are such a finesse group of guys, could ever play if somebody was allowed to play physical with them. And what the Cavaliers did was say, you know what, it might be against the rules, but we'll eat the fouls. We'll put ourselves in jeopardy foul-wise to be physical with these guys if that's what it's going to take to stop them. Can you even imagine this team, soft as cottonelle, trying to play with some of the teams I just mentioned in an era when you were allowed to be physical? Forget about it. Steph Curry and the rest of them, you know, live by the wide open three, die by the wide open three. As long as nobody's touching me, that's all that matters. They would have gotten their clocks cleaned.
Well, I agree with you, Bob, to a point about your assessment of the Warriors, but I've always said, though, that there is a misconception about this current group, and that is just because they shoot a lot of threes and they space the floor, that they must be finessed. They are a physical team in their own way. I mean, they don't have brute guys who knock you down, but they do a lot of the clutching and grabbing and pushing and shoving in order to create space for themselves. And so that's what I'm talking about when I talk about the Warriors' way of physicality. I hear your point, though.
Counter that, though, is exactly what you said, which the Cavaliers did, which was to give it back to them and then some, and that's my point. Yeah. Their little physicality that they try to play with to create space would never have worked against teams that were allowed to be even more physical, and that's kind of what I'm talking about. D-Man, real quick. LeBron.
By the way, Bob, you think MJ and the boys from the 95-96 Bulls aren't thrilled that 73-9 just became a footnote?
I already heard Scottie Pippen this morning on Mike and Mike, which you hear each and every day right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. And Scottie Pippen is acting, I don't want to say he's going 1972 Dolphins, but he's smiling ear to ear right now, saying there's no question who the best team was. We knew all along anyway, but now they didn't even win the ring. It don't mean a thing if you ain't got that ring. And that's exactly right. Your 73 are pointless as 16-0 from the New England Patriots was in, what was that, 06?
07.
07? 16-0 means nothing if you don't win the one at the end. And that's how this one came down too. Real quick, D-Man, LeBron led every player in the finals in all five major categories, which is something that has never been done, which is just incredible when you think about it. He ended up with a triple-double in Game 7. There was a point with about, I don't know, maybe 8 minutes to go or 7 minutes to go where LeBron had several really, really poor trips down the court in a row. And maybe it was some in the third quarter, too, because it was actually while Draymond was still doing his thing. And Draymond had 32-15-9, by the way. There was a point where LeBron turned it over a few times, missed a few shots in a row, was pound, 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 hero balling it without the result at the end. That I actually tweeted, LeBron is going to end up with a triple. This is when the game was obviously very much in doubt. Nobody knew how it was going to end up. I said, LeBron is going to end up with a Game 7 triple-double. But right now, the Warriors 23 is outplaying the Cavaliers 23. And he was. And Draymond Green had a monster game. How Steph Curry stopped getting Draymond Green the ball as the point guard in the last 6-7 minutes and never gave him a shot when he was 6 of 8 from 3 or 7 of 9 or whatever it was is unconscionable on their part. But it didn't look like, you know, LeBron was going to be able to do this, and he needed Kyrie to bail him out, but to provide that spark. That combination of LeBron James and what he did through particularly the back-to-back 41s in 5 and 6, and then down the stretch, kind of pulling away, not pulling away, how do we want to say that, Riding the ship from that stretch of bad possessions when they needed to get the ball into Kyrie's hands, did so, deferred to Kyrie, of course, which is when Kyrie expertly got that switch onto Curry and was able to stick that dagger three. Those two guys, honest to God, looked like they had been doing this for years. It is hard to understand that these guys have only played together for two seasons now, parts of two seasons, given the fact that Kyrie was injured. Just give us your final recollection of how those two guys and their roles in Game 7 and a 3-1 series comeback will go down in history.
Well, it's fantastic. Obviously, that was a historic performance by LeBron and Kyrie in Game 5 with the 41 apiece. Irving has – it's just amazing. I mean, you and I, Bob, have watched him since he became a Cavs, since he was drafted by the Cavs. You know, the maturation of Kyrie Irving is something to behold. When LeBron was in Miami, I'm sure he was taking notes about young up-and-comers around the league and certainly in his own backyard. And he probably saw a very, very talented Kyrie Irving, but a guy who needed to be cleansed of his losing habits. You know, by the time LeBron got back here, that was one of the big things that had to happen, was Kyrie had to get rid of the losing habits that occur when you're in that four-year toilet bowl that the Cavs were in. And what that's what you're seeing. You're seeing in the last couple of years, Kyrie has turned into a winning player that goes with his extraordinary talent. And now LeBron feels like, you know what, I've got my Batman or my Robin here who can, step up to be a Batman occasionally, which is great. And that's probably what he's going to need as his career continues to unfold, because now we're talking 14 seasons beginning next year. LeBron's going to need Kyrie to carry the mail in a lot of respects. And I think Kyrie's like, let me have it. Let's go.
Two all-time great performances in NBA Finals history. Two all-time great, and all-time great NBA Finals, period. A seven-game thriller that came right down to the end, especially capping with a 3-1 series deficit comeback victory over the defending champions who had just set the regular season record for wins. All-timers all the way around. What a way to end the drought for the city of Cleveland and championships. Dennis Mantloff, thanks for your fun analysis of this whole thing. Thanks for your great analysis all season long on the Cavaliers. We always appreciate it. Enjoy this one out there in Cleveland with everybody. Enjoy the parade on Wednesday that's going to be held there. Hopefully they'll figure out how to throw one since it hadn't been done in a long time. And we'll talk to you again very soon, my friend.
Hopefully we'll stay in touch as the Indians remain in contention.
Absolutely right, especially when we get Indians-Tigers series coming up, and I know there's some big ones. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it. There's Dennis Mantloff. We're going to get a quick timeout now. Bottom of the hour, Sports Center coming your way. We're going to continue our reflection of the championship, the shot heard around the world, Kyrie Irving's Dagger 3, LeBron James, beginning to end leadership in the games in the seven-game series. Culminating in a unanimous MVP award for him in the finals. We're going to talk to Rick Nolan to get his thoughts about this and you as well at 866-240-1065 right here on The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 1065 The Ticket.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James with the rejection.
Irving and Curry, one-on-one. Irving puts it up.
It's good. Kyrie Irving from downtown.
It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
I just knew what we was capable of, even being down 3-1 versus the greatest regular season team ever. 73-9, and everybody counted us out, and that's when we strive the most, when everybody counts us out.
I would go to war with these guys any night, any day, and they stuck with it, and we had a chance to give up, but we made history tonight. And I told these guys, all year we've been making history. Why not tonight?
That's exactly what they did. They made history, did the Cleveland Cavaliers, not just NBA history, but Cleveland sports history as well. And we continue to revel in just an unbelievable moment. Thanks again to Dennis Mantloff for joining us. Look at what we're talking about here. We're talking about not just winning the first title that city has gotten in any major professional sport in the last 52 years, but also doing it in such fashion, beating a team that was the defending champ, defeating a defending champ that had a regular season record 73 wins, defeating a team in a series in which they trailed 3-1, something that no team has ever done before. Coming back from a finals 3-1 deficit to win 3 straight games, twice in their building where they had only lost coming into the series 3 times all year, playoffs and regular season combined. You had to beat them 2 times in a row on their home floor. All of those superlatives, what the Cavaliers were able to accomplish.
Actually, Bob, I even have one more because it kind of gets lost in the 3-1. Remember, they were down 0-2 as well, which is in NBA comebacks. That's a separate list. And I discovered that there was only one other team prior to the Cavs that was down 0-2 and then 3-1 and still won the series. That was the West Semis in 95. Hakeem, Drexler, and the rest of the Houston Rockets over the Barkley Suns. So that's only the second time that's ever happened in the NBA, because usually you're down 0-2 and then 3-1, you're done.
Yeah, no question about it. So, I mean, just all kinds of history made yesterday by those Cavaliers. And joining us now to talk about it, a guy who's been with us for a huge, huge part of the ride through the playoffs and even a lot during the regular season as well, Rick Nolan, longtime 30-plus years Cavaliers beat writer, finally getting to write a story about champions for the very first time, at least having those champions being the team that he has covered. Rick Nolan, thanks for the time. How are you, Rick?
Bob, right now I feel like I'm going in more different directions than Kyrie on a through the leg, behind the back spin dribble move. It's just been one thing after another. Eventually you'll get a chance to sit back and take it all in, but right now it's continuing to grind away at the job, and it's a manner in which I've never done it in 33 years in this profession and 30 years on this beat. So it's been enjoyable to be able to write season-ending articles from the winning side of the fence. It's a completely new feeling in my career.
Rick, you and I had conversations last week in which we were talking about season-ending in a different way. The Cavaliers had lost the first two, and it just looked very plain that they were outclassed by this Warriors team. They had no answer for the offense, the type of offense that the Warriors ran, and offensively themselves, they were out of sync. And then, of course, they won game 3, and it's like, all right, well, and a little hope here. And then to have it dashed by Curry and the Warriors in game 4, we were talking again in a, well, wait till next year kind of a mode. What happened? The last 3 games are inexplicable. I think winning game 5 on their floor and winning it relatively comfortably, coming back to game 6 and doing that at home, and then last night, I mean, it was almost like a tale of two different series, the first 4 versus the final 3.
Yeah. Taking absolutely nothing away from the Cavs, because they played like champions and they deserve this. But Draymond being suspended for game 5, I think, kind of changed the mental psyche of this entire series. That gave the Cavs hope when they may otherwise not have had a whole lot. Regardless of what they say now, they look like a pretty beaten down group after game 4. And had Draymond played, there's probably a pretty good chance that this series might have ended in 5 games, but he didn't, and that's his own fault that he didn't. The Cavs took advantage, and that gave them a reason for hope, because they were heading home where they felt like they could win, and they knew if they did that, they would have a Game 7, albeit on the road, but to have LeBron James, to have Kyrie Irving, to have a 48 minutes where anything could happen, and they really believed that they could get it done, and you know, lo and behold, they did. Not always in a real pretty fashion, but I don't think it's supposed to be pretty. I don't think it's supposed to be easy when you've waited 52 years for a title. So, you know, to all their credit, they found a way to finish things off in historic fashion, like you guys were saying.
I mean,
stuff like this just doesn't happen.
Rick, it's one thing to describe all of those intangibles that you just talked about, you know, the will and, you know, and they believed and the inspiration coming from the Draymond thing and the Warriors being deflated by that. And they said there was a simmering rage and a fury. We're going to win this for Draymond, you know, when he got suspended and we're going to show LeBron who's a crybaby, you know, and talking about how he had his feelings hurt and all that stuff. But there's one thing as far as the emotion and the intangibles about the will and the desire to get something done, but you got to do it. And from an X's and O's standpoint, what did Tyronn Lue do differently? What did Steve Kerr do differently? What happened on the court that actually enabled the Cavaliers to completely and thoroughly outplay the defending champions the way they did, particularly over these last three?
Well, the one thing that stands out above all others is offensively, since Golden State switches virtually everything, 1 through 5, they found a way to make Steph Curry end up on either Kyrie Irving or LeBron James in a lot of instances, and they exploited that over and over again to the point where, you know, we saw the Steph blow up in Game 6 in the Binky throw.
I love it. I absolutely love it. That's what it's been called.
Can you imagine what the reaction would have been, not only locally but nationwide and worldwide, had LeBron James acted like that and Savannah James taken to Twitter to claim that the league was rigged?
Against her guy and her team and everything else. That was so embarrassing, Rick. There aren't words to describe.
It truly was. And if LeBron had done that, it would still be national headline news all over the country. It's just a microscope that he lives in. And, you know, fortunately for him, other than the decision, he's made a lot of good decisions and rarely put himself in situations where those kind of things happen. So kudos to him. You could tell last night when that game ended that, the emotion just poured out of him. He was too overcome to really even celebrate. He just hit the floor. I thought it was authentic. I thought it was genuine, and quite honestly, it was nice to see.
Yeah, I did too. There was no drama there. There was no show there. That wasn't, you know, for the cameras. That was legitimate. You could tell because of everything you talked about, you know, about living under the microscope and being held maybe to a different standard than a Curry or somebody else might be in a fit of emotional rage like that. It would have been different for him. There's no question. The weight of the world was on his shoulders, of course. He's the one who made the promise. He's the one who made this statement after Curry got the unanimous MVP in the regular season that, yeah, well, there's MVP and then there's best player. So he's wearing all of that and he's carrying all of that, and he made the promise that he was going to come back to Northeast Ohio and bring a championship there. He's carrying all of that. I think there's no doubt that the emotion that he felt at the end when it just came all flowing out was legitimate and real. I agree with you. It was beautiful to see. And the question now is, now that he has made that, now that he has lifted all of that, I mean, look at his legacy. Everybody was talking about when they were down 2-0 and then when they were down 3-1. What 2-5 in the finals is going to do to his legacy. It's amazing that it's only one series difference, but 3-4 looks so much different than 2-5 does. And then when you start to actually look at context, how this third one was won, what that's got to do for his peace of mind and maybe not carry that, you know, that anxiety around about the judgment that's got to do for him is indescribable.
Yeah, I made mention last night on Twitter that this series win, from a legacy standpoint, probably counts as worth 2 or 3 championships just because of the way it was achieved. You know, if you look back at things, 07, he really had no chance, and last year he was his only chance. So, you know, he kind of gets mulligans for those. So, last night I thought, you know, this entire series actually, it just vaults him up, you know, the echelon of the all-time greats, and he was already pretty doggone high on it. You know, 3-4, with two of them, you know, that you probably couldn't have done anything about anyway. Looks a whole lot better, like you said. And there's reason to believe there might be more to come. You know, the Cavs aren't a perfect team, but they showed an ability to grind, and they have two unbelievable superstars that can get it done in crunch time. And that's going to be hard to beat.
I want to talk about that other superstar in a minute, Kyrie Irving. But just real quick on this, you wrote your piece today among your many works that you did today that I read, Rick. The quote that LeBron James made was this. Well, one of the many that stood out to me was this. My goal is still to win as many titles as possible, no question. But what's most important to me is bringing one trophy back to Northeast Ohio. The moment that was printed, it's on the cover of Sports Illustrated, at least on an email that I got, too, so apparently it's making the rounds. But the moment that quote was written and read by a number of people, I'm already reading people saying, what does that mean? Is he leaving Cleveland hanging again and wondering and speculating until he signed long term? He said, I want to continue to win as many titles as possible, but the most important thing is bringing one trophy back to Northeast Ohio. Are people just nuts? I said, they're saying one. That means he's done it one. He got one for them, and now he doesn't have to stay if he doesn't want to.
Right. Well, first off, let's make it clear that quote was from his 2014 Sports Illustrated essay when he announced he was coming back to Cleveland.
Okay, so that must be why they repurposed it right on the cover of Sports Illustrated for today.
Yeah, and you know, there are certain people, Bob, that are going to infer whatever they want to infer. And I'm going to infer what I infer right now for you. And I think that was LeBron's way of saying that he has to win one before he can win two or three, that he fully understood Cleveland's sports history and just how title-starved they were. He's not going anywhere for the foreseeable future, if ever. He is happy here. His family's here. It's his home. I would be beyond shocked if he wasn't with this team for at least 3, 4, 5 more years.
He made some statements about, I don't know, a week and a half ago. It was in the middle of this series, I think, which is ironic and odd. But maybe it was like during one of those two-day downtime periods in which he made all kinds of statements about how much he loved being here, meaning in Cleveland, how much he was looking forward to this or that. I can't remember the quotes, but I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, he was talking about the LeBron James Family Foundation and how much nicer it was for him to be here and to be able to do things hands-on and to see people's faces and have a direct impact on kids than it was while he was doing all the same things, but from, 1,200 miles away in Miami, that he just saw his impact was so much greater being on hand year-round to do those things. And that's just another reason to believe that he's not going.
Yeah, anywhere. Every one of those quotes, like I said, I don't have memorized, but I remember reading and saying, that doesn't sound like a guy who's looking, across the fence at greener grass again. This sounds like a guy who's pretty really, ready to finish this thing out here for however many years he has left. Let's talk about Kyrie Irving. I was of the belief, really, after last night, that there could have been and should have been co-MVPs. I know LeBron's numbers, especially back-to-back 41s in games 5 and 6, the triple-double in game 7, leading every player in the top 5 categories, points, rebounds, assists, blocks, and steals, would certainly say, of course, he's the MVP. But there were moments in this series, particularly in these 3 games, that they had to win. When LeBron wasn't feeling it, wasn't getting it done, was turning it over, whatever the case might be, where the go-to guy, the guy that, in fact, even last night in the midway through the fourth quarter when LeBron had several dribble, dribble, dribble hero ball moments where he took bad shots and missed them, I was tweeting, get the ball in Kyrie's hands. And eventually they did, and it resulted in that dagger 3 from Kyrie that ended up winning the game and the series and the championship. There were moments where Kyrie had 20 in the first half as LeBron got a slow start, and they needed every one. Even yesterday, down 7 at half, it's Kyrie who scores 17 in the second half to drive and narrow that lead down, making shots with his left hand falling down from a, you know, from a runner on the left side of the lane where he ends up in the corner on a seat of his pants. Some of the things Kyrie did were just spectacular. I feel like that whole thing last year, Rick, was played out this year. That LeBron couldn't beat the Warriors. I'm sorry, that LeBron could have beaten the Warriors last year if he had had his Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love. This year he did, proving just how valuable especially Kyrie was. I was really thinking it was a co-MVP type performance. Your thoughts?
Well, if they'd have put that ballot in front of me, Bob, I got to be honest, I would have filled LeBron James' name out in about 2 seconds. I just think that he was the driving force behind this whole series. Kyrie was phenomenal. I always look at Co as kind of a cop-out, refusing to make a decision. And I just don't see, personally, any way that I could have picked Kyrie over LeBron. LeBron's numbers, again, in the finals for the second straight year, if you include the steals and the blocks, were unprecedented across the board. He led both these teams in points, rebounds, assists, steals, and blocks.
For those who don't know the numbers you're talking about, I'll throw them to you. 29.7, 11.3, 8.9, 2.6, and 2.3. Those are points, rebounds, assists, steals, and blocks, respectively.
Yeah, and I think he was a runaway winner in turnovers, too.
He was. Yes, he was. Well, and that was the whole reason for my point. I agree with you, by the way, Rick. I would not have been able to write Kyrie's name over LeBron's. I would have written them side by side because it was in those moments where LeBron, again, was just in a funk, turning it over, taking bad shots, making bad decisions, whatever it was, where Kyrie was just the, wow, look how quickly he settled it.
Right.
Look how quickly he came back and answered, you know, two straight Klay Thompson threes with buckets. Or a steal and a score. The job he did defensively too on Steph Curry. Not that he guarded him exclusively one on one, but for the majority of the of the games, the job he did defensively too. I felt like he was every bit as important to the championship as anybody was, and I would have written his name beside LeBron's, not in place of, but I would have written it beside.
Yeah, he was. Last night, I think in the series, LeBron was just better. If I was doing a pyramid step by step, LeBron would be the crown right at the top, and Kyrie would be the piece right below it.
That's fair enough. That's fair enough. Let's talk about Kevin Love real quick before we go, Rick, because Kevin Love, obviously much maligned, a lot of criticism. Of course, he had the concussion, so he missed a game and everything else. And last night, you know, he didn't put up a big scoring night, obviously, but the 14 rebounds, particularly on the offensive end, in huge situations where they just needed him to be a big guy doing the things underneath that he has done for all of his career in terms of being on the glass. But then also, we all know about that tremendous series of defense.
Unbelievable.
Where he got matched up on one of the greatest ball handlers in history. And Steph Curry could not shake Kevin Love for about 10 straight seconds of that shot clock.
Exactly. Two things stood out. I may have forgotten the game, Bob, but I don't ever recall Kevin Love going that hard to the offensive boards in two seasons in Cleveland as he did last night. It was almost like he knew, I'm not a part of the offense. If I'm going to help this team, I've got to be able to get second chance points or get us second chance points. I think he deserves huge kudos for that. When quite frankly, I and a number of other people were extremely worried about him, how he would respond. But he held up, and the defense on Steph, that came on the possession after the Kyrie three.
Right.
To Kevin's credit, he's a very cerebral player, and he knew in that situation, and you know, maybe it's one of those things Steph would like to do over, because he probably could have gone around Kevin Love on any of the 37 dribbles he took on that possession, but it was pretty obvious to me, you and everybody watching on national television, that he was bound and determined that he was going to get some type of three-pointer off there. And Kevin Love knew that as well. And he said, you might get it off, but it's not going to be an open one. It's going to be a contested shot by a 6'10 guy. And he kind of threw up almost a little one-handed shot put there.
Yeah.
And it came surprisingly close, even. I mean, it got back iron. But huge kudos. That right there marked the beginning of the end, even though, was it after that shot that Kyrie just went on that hell-bent drive to the other end of the floor and for some reason felt like he had to shoot?
Yeah, I think that was it. I think that was that right after that. Yeah.
And I think he was fortunate enough, I think, that the whole game's a little bit of a haze. but he was fortunate enough, I think, on that possession that the ball actually got blocked out of bounds and the Cavs maintained possession, if memory serves.
I think you're right, and you're right. It is a bit of a haze, but boy, I mean, honestly, they got such huge – and J.R. Smith, too, just, you know, again, when they needed it to start the second half.
And what about LeBron's block on Iguodala?
Oh, my goodness. Signature play.
He got that thing at an inch before it got to the backboard, or it's goaltending.
And then how many times did Tristan Thompson – I mean, honestly, everybody who took the floor, maybe with the exception of Mo Williams, Richard Jefferson –
yeah, it wasn't real good. Yeah, Richard Jefferson had 9 rebounds.
Yeah, how about that? You know, but almost everybody who took the floor played a huge role in this thing. And just like I said, I still can't understand how they were able to come back against that team in that situation and to win on that floor where you just don't win. Just a remarkable thing. Rick, listen, we appreciate you joining us today and really all of the times you've joined us almost weekly since the playoffs started and a little bit during the regular season, too. We appreciate your insight. I know you're enjoying yourself more maybe as a sports journalist now than you ever have because you get to cover a team that won something for a change rather than writing those season-ending post-scripts of, well, maybe next year. So it's next year.
You know, Bob, I just realized last night at about 1 in the morning – that the NBA draft is Thursday. I don't even think the Cavs have a pick. I've thought so little about it. It's really nice to be able to be covering a victory parade on Wednesday, and when the draft comes, we'll deal with that then. And it may be a complete non-factor from a Cleveland perspective, and that's fine too.
And it actually is, guys. The Cavs have no draft picks in either round for this one.
Thank you for confirming that. There will be no draft preview in the Chronicle or the Medina Gazette. That is one thing I can cross off my long list of things I have to worry about here in the next few days.
There's a 4-year period where we were wondering exactly how many ping pong balls we had and how many.
Oh, that went by. Yeah. Went by without me even paying any attention to it either.
It's a beautiful
different time,
thing.
And it's a better time.
Especially
yes,
when
is.
You consider the fact that how many of those things turned up the likes of Anthony Bennett, who's playing in the Canadian League. And I think Wiggins is going to be a player. We know that. But anyway, hey, Rick, great stuff. Enjoy the parade on Wednesday. Thanks for taking the time today. We appreciate you.
All righty, anytime.
Have a great one. There you go. All right. Kush, thank you for that. We don't have to pay attention to the draft from a Cleveland perspective.
Pistons have a couple picks, but the Cavs have none.
Where do the Pistons pick?
I got to double check. I want to say because they weren't in the lottery, obviously, and I can't remember off the top of my head
We'll figure it out. You know what? To me, by the way, NBA's got to space that out a little bit. You can't end the finals on Sunday and have the draft on Thursday.
I completely agree with that.
You've got to space that out a little bit. This has got to be in July sometime. This is just a little too crazy for me. All right. We're late. Let's get a quick time out here. We'll do a top of the hour Sports Center. Come back and take your phone calls at 866-240-1065. Championship. A championship for the city of Cleveland. A championship for the state of Ohio for the first time in 26 years. What an unbelievable feeling. Let's get your reactions next.
There's a red moon rising.
Curry helps out. Smith pass right through the hands of Curry. James, the two-handed slam.
On the Cuyahoga River.
James on the drive. Fouled. Layup. Counted and one.
Rolling into Cleveland to the lake.
5 to shoot. Azealia again goes back up on him. James steps back for 3. Puts it in. LeBron James from downtown.
There's a red moon rising on the Cuyahoga River, rolling into Cleveland to the lake.
Irving drives on Green, gets inside, off balance, comes up short, gets his own rebound and puts it back. Kyrie Irving, the second effort.
There's an orange bars wind down the Cuyahoga River, rolling into Cleveland to the lake.
Irvin drives, hop step inside, close it up, misses. Rebound taken by Iguodala. Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James.
Oh, my goodness.
Cleveland, city of light, city of magic. Cleveland, city of light, you're calling me.
I'm up on a minute remaining.
And they're putting Curry in the pick and roll, trying to get him on Irving.
Irving and Curry, one-on-one. Irving puts it up. It's good. Kyrie Irving from downtown.
Irving now with 26 and back in Cleveland. These fans realize they're 10.6 seconds away now from a championship.
Cleveland, even now I can remember. Cause the Cuyahoga River goes smoking through my dreams.
Trying to stay with Curry, catches, one dribble, steps back, puts up a three, won't go. Rebound tip taken by Spates, final seconds. It's over, it's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
Burn on, big river, burn on.
I understood what the people of Northeast Ohio have been through the last 50-plus years. I kept it at bay. I never stressed the fact that I didn't feel the pressure, that none of those things, so it always kept me level-headed. But I understood what everyone in Northeast Ohio have been through the last 50-plus years, and I'm happy to be a part of history. I can't wait to get back home.
Now the Lord can make you tumble. The Lord can make you turn. The Lord can make you overflow. The Lord can make you burn.
I just knew what we was capable of, even being down 3-1 versus the greatest regular season team ever. You know, 73-9, and everybody counted us out, and that's when we strive the most, when everybody counts us out. And that's definitely when I strive the most, when everybody count me out.
Burn on, big river, burn on.
I gave everything that I had. I poured my heart, my blood, my sweat, my tears to this game, and against all odds, I don't know why we want to take the hardest road, or why the man above gives me the hardest road, but there's nothing a man above don't put you in situations that you can't handle. And I just kept that same positive attitude, like, instead of saying, why me, they're saying, this is what he want me to do. And, Cleveland, this is for you.
Burn on, big river, burn on.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Onward into hour number two. Well, into hour number two we are, because we ran hour number one so doggone long past the top of the hour. Thanks so much for joining us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader, but today we are celebrating a championship in the state of Ohio for all of Ohio. Specifically for the folks from Northeast Ohio and the long wait that they have had. But my goodness gracious, even the state, Jim, we talked about this last week.
Yeah.
The state of Ohio hasn't seen a professional championship since 1990, when Eric Davis and Chris Sabo and
the Nasty Boys.
Reds. Say again?
The Nasty Boys.
The Nasty Boys, Dibble, Charlton, and Myers beat the A's for the World Series in 1990. No Ohio professional team has won a title since then until just last night. And obviously, we all know the story. No Cleveland team has won a title since 1964. So we celebrate with them and for them. And how about the job of trolling being done right now by LeBron James? Did you see what is trending on Twitter right now, Jim? I was trying to figure it out. I just went on Twitter during the break as you were playing that outstanding montage, by the way, of the Burning River song, the Cleveland song, which, you know, it's such a depressing song. You know, it's the song that was used, obviously, at the start of the movie Major League, kind of to underscore how futile and pathetic that city is. And, you know, it's the Roll On, Big River. It's about the Burning River, the Calgary River, which caught fire, and, you know, all the negative stuff about that city and about their sports teams. and you just turned it into the theme for something celebratory as the Cavaliers are now the world champions. But as you were playing that, Jim, very well done, by the way, I was looking on Twitter and looking at the trends, and Ultimate Warrior is trending. Do you remember the former WWE superstar wrestler, the one who died about a year ago?
Yes, yes, vaguely, but yes.
Ultimate Warrior's trending.
Right.
Why is the Ultimate Warrior trending, I wonder? And I clicked on it, and I looked at it, and here's why. When the Cavaliers arrived back in Cleveland today with their championship trophy to just an enormous crowd of well-wishers and fans around 11:30 this morning, getting off the plane, some of the attire was a little bit interesting. J.R. Smith just went full-on shirtless.
Right.
He is just out there letting his tattoos be his shirt. He is covered in them, so it's like he does have a shirt on. LeBron James went a little different. LeBron James is wearing a blue with kind of gold lettering. Those colors sound familiar. Blue with gold lettering, Ultimate Warrior T-shirt, featuring the picture of the Warrior in the center of that lettering. The Ultimate Warrior from the guy who just beat the Warriors. LeBron James trolling Golden State 24 hours. Less than 24 hours, just a little over 12 hours after winning the NBA championship in their building. How outstanding is that?
Oh, that's good stuff. No, I hadn't seen that yet, and I'm opening a Twitter right now to try and find that. I said, that's funny.
Now, he's also wearing a baseball cap. He's wearing a Kermit the Frog sipping tea cap, and that apparently is a thing, too, but it's a thing that escaped me. I must have missed this. I don't know what this is, but people are saying LeBron trolling the Warriors after the title, wearing the Kermit sipping tea hat and the Ultimate Warrior T-shirt. I've been looking to figure out what the Kermit sipping tea story is, and I don't know what it is. If anybody does know, please get on the phone right now and tell us. 866-240-1065. What is the Kermit sipping tea thing? How is that a part of the trolling? Certainly the Ultimate Warrior is obvious. Hey, Warriors. The Ultimate Warrior is right here, the one who just kicked your you-know-whats and put up historic NBA numbers in the process. By the way, NBA Finals numbers in the process. As I mentioned to Rick Nolan or during Rick Nolan's commentary about LeBron winning the MVP, the numbers are indeed staggering. LeBron in the final game had 27, 11, and 11. That's pretty amazing. Game 7 triple-double at their place. That's amazing. Give them all the credit, all the credit in the world for that. But there was a big part of that game, big part of it, where the number 23 for the Warriors was outplaying the number 23 for the Cavaliers. And that's Draymond Green, who was almost single-handedly keeping the Warriors, you know, step for step with the Cavaliers. Now, LeBron obviously got a little bit more aggressive toward the end, and he had a big three late. He had a free throw to make a three-point lead, a four-point lead, which is extraordinarily important, obviously. But LeBron James, you know, was not outplaying, you know, his counterpart for the Warriors, Draymond Green, for very much of that game. But that shouldn't get in the way of the overall numbers for the seven-game series. In these seven games, LeBron James put up historic numbers in that no one else in the history of the NBA has ever led the NBA Finals on both teams in every single major statistical category. No one has ever led in points, rebounds, assists, steals, and blocks. But that is precisely what LeBron James did. And that is something you cannot overstate. You cannot try to qualify or quantify or minimize or anything of that nature. Just accept it and revel in it, because it is, I don't know, dare I say, it might be something that would never happen again. I can't imagine another NBA Finals in which somebody, especially if it goes seven games, would lead in every category. You know, block shots you think would be something that would be led by a big guy, a center. The assist category you would think would be led by a point guard. But LeBron led in points, rebounds, assists, steals, and blocked shots on his way to that MVP award. So he was indeed the Ultimate Warrior, and trolling the so-called Warriors from Golden State the way he is certainly deserves every single bit of accolades that he gets. And guess what? He deserves the right. I think he has earned the right to troll them, especially when you think about what he did to the team that started to poke the bear. Jim, what did we say? If you recall, on this show, after game four, and the Warriors had come back, and, of course, we all know what happened with Draymond Green throwing that backhanded punch between the legs of LeBron James, hitting his Kings, if you will.
That would have been a week ago today on the show, because Game 4 was a Friday and Game 5 was a week ago today.
Thank you. There you go.
So that would have been a week ago.
And they were, and then of course it was over that weekend that Draymond Green, ended up having his foul upgraded to a flagrant one, which
right.
put him over the top and got him the suspension, and led to the Warriors, including and maybe especially Klay Thompson and Ayesha Curry of all people, poking the bear, tugging Superman's cape, all those things that we talked about, and we just said, you know. They're feeling pretty good right now, are the Warriors, and they're having fun, and Draymond Green is going to watch the game from a luxury suite at the Coliseum.
At the Coliseum, yep.
You know, right next door while the A's played and in Game 5, and then as soon as they won the game, Game 5 on their floor against the Cavs, he would go down under the tunnel. They had security ready to rush him right over there to celebrate with his teammates, that whole thing. But they started that, first of all, booing LeBron every time he touched the ball in Game 5. Calling him the crybaby whose feelings got hurt because one of the reasons for the showdown with Green was because Green reportedly called him a B, and that was too much for LeBron, who said, I'm a grown man, you don't talk to me like that. And they said, oh, what the heck's the matter with LeBron? Did his feelings get hurt? And they just mocked and poked and mocked and poked and tugged a little bit more at the cape. And you and I said very, very specifically on this show, you know, I get why they're feeling good. They're up 3-1, and they're going back to their own place. I understand they should be feeling on top of the world. But if what they're doing right now comes back to bite them because they've just inspired somebody who was playing less than stellar basketball through the first 4 games of the series, probably with the exception of Game 3 at that point, talking about LeBron, it's not a good idea to do that. Well, here we are 4 games later. 3 games later, the 3, 5, 6, and 7 that the Cavaliers just won to win the championship, LeBron James goes 29.7, 11.3, 8.9, 2.6, and 2.3 to lead all 5 of those categories that we just talked about. And come to find out, yeah, Clay, Dre, Ayesha, and everybody else in Golden State, meaning in Oakland, California, or San Francisco Bay Area, who were mocking LeBron James, you know what? Lesson learned. You inspired a guy, LeBron James, who looked like and felt like it seemed just knew that this wasn't going to work for them. Down 3-1, facing history square in the face, staring at it where you know you don't come back. Nobody has ever come back from down 3-1 to win. And it looked like maybe a guy who was somewhat kind of, I don't want to say beaten, but, you know, accepting an understanding of where they were at this particular point in time. I think that Draymond ejection, I think that Draymond flagrant, and I think that subsequent jawing and this chatter and the snark and everything else that they were doing to LeBron James repurposed him to go out there and do what we saw him do in games 5 and 6. Back-to-back 41s, including matching Kyrie's 41 in game 5, and then doing, of course, the triple-double in game number 7. They deserve to be trolled. They deserve to be mocked. They deserve every single bit of negativity that comes their way. They're 73 wins, talking trash about being better than the 95-96 Bulls, talking trash about being better than the Showtime Lakers, talking trash about being the greatest team of all time in a single season. All of it up in smoke now because they just didn't know enough to keep their pie holes shut and not tug the cape of Superman.
And that's the biggest thing for me, you know, sitting here today, not even 24 full hours after this thing goes final last night, and the two big thoughts on this subject I have is, one, LeBron is still and is or is again, depending on your point of view, the best player on the planet. Curry's designation is best shooter, period, end of discussion. Number two, yes, a lot of people want to put an asterisk next to 73 wins. I won't. It's still in the record books. But as former Cav Ron Harper, I believe it was, in 95-96 with those Bulls, he printed shirts for everybody. Don't mean a thing without the ring. So, period, end of discussion. The 95-96 Bulls are the greatest team of all time. And to me, there's no more debate on either of those.
No, there's no doubt about that. All of that is very, very true. I would question one thing about that, though, and that is about the asterisk. I don't think it's an asterisk that goes next to the 73 wins. It's just noted that the 73 wins were meaningless.
Exactly.
There's no asterisk next to 16-0 for Tom Brady and the Patriots. It's just noted that they didn't win the Super Bowl. So it doesn't mean squat.
Right.
And unless you set that record and finish it with a title, it just doesn't mean squat. And I'm sorry. 73, and you remember how hard they pushed for it, too.
Yes.
It didn't come organically. It didn't come with, you know,
I think the genesis of it was last summer when everyone was saying, oh, you know, you only beat the Cavs because they were, you know, they had all their guys hurt. I think that was the genesis of all that for the Warriors in the regular season.
Yeah, probably in part it was. They lumped it all together for motivation, and they pursued that in the last week, not resting their guys. We want this thing. We want this thing. We want to be the greatest of all time. We embrace it. They had talked about it to the media at all times during that last couple of weeks of the season before they got that record, and it meant something to them. And it means so much more to me now. And when I say me, I mean just anybody who's not them, knowing that they wanted it so badly. And at the end of the day, it doesn't mean squat.
By the way, funny side note, amongst the many tweets I've been, you know, scouring since yesterday, Adam Schefter had one earlier today or late last night, which is fascinating because I didn't even realize this, but it's true. No team with the regular season wins record in any sport has capped the season with a championship. Warriors, 07 Patriots. Right now, the 01 Mariners have the win record in baseball, which is actually tied with a Cubs team from 100 years ago that also lost the World Series. And sorry to say this for everyone around here, the 95-96 Red Wings had the most points in NHL history. They did not win the cup. That's a fascinating dynamic.
Oh, you mean so based as of now that the Warriors, because I was going to say, because when the Bulls did it, they won, but now with the Warriors,
all four sports, the all-time regular season wins leader, never won the championship that year. That's a fascinating dynamic.
That is interesting. That is very, very interesting. All right, well, let's go to Stevan in Toledo. Stevan, talking a little NBA Finals with us right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket. Hey, Stevan, how are you?
I'm good. First of all, I had a couple things real quick. I know you got other callers that might want to say something because I really didn't have any stake in the game last night. I'm not a Cavs fan. I'm not a LeBron fan. I'm not an Oakland fan. But I did enjoy the game thoroughly. That's probably one of the best games I had ever seen. And it was possibly, enhanced down to any finals, even back in the days when the league was a little bit more physical and, you know, probably a little bit more talented. But that was a great game. I enjoyed it thoroughly, and I can enjoy it thoroughly because I don't like games where I have a stake in and I'm on pins and needles and just I can, as a basketball fan, I just thoroughly enjoyed it.
I totally agree with that. That's such a great point. I'm glad you brought up. This was, regardless of whether the Cavs had won or not, although I think the underdog winning, the team that had been down 3-1, so it makes it more historic. The championship does add to it. But regardless of how the game would have ended up, you're right. That was just one of the great all-time finals basketball games. And quite frankly, that was one of the great all-time finals. If you go back and look at some of the great seven-game wars between, you know, great NBA iconic teams, this one will take a backseat to none in terms of drama and in terms, again, of historic accomplishments such as coming back from 3-1 to win for the first time ever and, of course, beating the team that had the regular season win total.
That's correct. And I wanted to comment on something here. The beat writer from Cleveland had
Rick Nolan.
Some of the things he pointed out. I think some of the comments he made, but I understand he's not an expert in the field, but he is the beat writer for Cleveland. Some of the things that he said, I think it's just a little hometown biasness. I really think that Kyrie Irving was the MVP of that series. I really do because, like I said, and just like you played on it last year, if Kyrie, even if you didn't have Kevin Love, if you even at least had Kyrie Irving, that series would have been a little different last year. I just believe that. This year, he is such a contributor to that game. I mean, you think about it, he's a point guard. Point guard, if your point guard is scoring that many points, that's a problem. I'm sorry, but that's a problem. And I think that the whole voting process is subjective because last year, Andre Iguodala won the MVP. And he got 7 votes, LeBron got 4, and Steph Curry got none. So you figure that out. I mean, you can go in, I understand what the stats was on LeBron, but LeBron, he played his part, but the most instrumental, I don't think you're winning that without him. Even with his numbers, I still don't think you're winning that game without Irving. And I just, for me, I thought it was disrespectful, and I think he looked at it as, well, I'm going to give credit to the hometown guy. Kyrie Irving is just a hired gun. You know, he just came to Cleveland. He has no stake in it, you know. And I kind of think that's disrespectful for some guy who came there and played his heart out for a team that's in a city that's not his.
I think I would say a couple of things in response to that. One, you're absolutely right about Irving, who they would not have won it without him. And in fact, there were stretches during even victories in the 4 games of the 7 that they won in the series. There were stretches where LeBron James was simply not playing well, not just not dominating, not playing well, where he was truly bailed out and rescued by the extremely aggressive and ultra smooth offensive force that is Kyrie Irving. I don't think they would have won it without him.
I think he was more consistent throughout the series and throughout the playoffs. I think he was more consistent.
I think you're right about that too. But although this award is just for the finals, not throughout the playoffs. But the flip side of that, of course, is somebody would say, "Well, take LeBron James out. Is Kyrie Irving teaming with J.R. Smith and Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson to lead the Cavaliers to a victory?" And of course, the answer is no. LeBron James is the most valuable piece of that puzzle. But the way they played, Kyrie Irving was equally, to me, if you take Kyrie off, they don't win. If you take LeBron off, they don't win. Both of them were equally instrumental to that championship, and that's why I would have given co-MVPs to those two guys.
I would have went a different way because LeBron, we know he's the man. He already has the mantle. He's probably the best player in the NBA right now. But Kyrie, I think it's more deserving of him is showing his appreciation for what he did for that team. I would give it to him. LeBron just didn't need it, And if I was LeBron, I would have given the trophy to him. It's kind of like Tom Brady, the gesture he made. I'm going to give the vehicle they get from MVP to the person who stopped, who caught the interception. I guess that's just the way he felt that play won the game for them. So if without that play, we don't win the game against Seattle Seahawks. So, and I think it's the same thing without that 3-pointer, that clutch shot. And mind you this, for him to take that shot, it's a lot of nerve. It's a tied game. He didn't need a three.
And he had Curry one on one, which is what he wanted. He got the switch he needed off a pick to get matched up one on one with Curry, and we have seen him dance around Curry and make Steph look stupid multiple times in this series. He could have taken him to the basket, but for him to do what he did and then step back to create space and take that took, grapefruits of steel, if you understand my meaning. Absolutely,
yes, I do.
And for him to drill that. Look, you're not going to get me to argue with you about Kyrie, like I said, but I also know that when you do what LeBron did, that historic series of the 29-6 and 11.5 and 8.9 and all the rest, leading in all 5 categories, which no one has ever done, not Michael, not Magic, not Bird, not Bill Russell, not Kareem, no one has ever done that. You can't argue against LeBron getting it. So to me, I really would have. I really would have just given him co-MVPs. There's no way LeBron wins that without Kyrie doing what he did. And, of course, there's no way Kyrie would be in a position to do those things if LeBron hadn't imposed his will, especially when he needed to. So I think it's fair. All right, my friend.
All right.
Thank you, Stephen. I appreciate the phone call. By the way, Kyrie Irving in the final 5 games of the series. Remember, he did not play well. Then again, neither did LeBron. Then again, neither did really anybody in the first 2 games of that series that they lost at Golden State. But in the last 5, all Kyrie Irving did was average 31 points a game. 31 points, 4.5 assists, 4 rebounds. He shot 50% from the floor. That's right, 50%. That's not, when you look at the degree of difficulty of his shots, that's extraordinary. I mean, 50% in the finals? That's something you expect Shaq or somebody to do because most of his shots are dunks. He scored 31 points on 50% shooting and 47% from three in the last five games, along with the 4.2 rebounds and 4.5 assists per game, and 1.8 steals. Kyrie Irving was simply sensational, and most importantly, it wasn't just the total points, it was when he scored those points. When LeBron James started off very, very slowly in game five, it was Kyrie Irving who had 20 points in the first half, and I think 16 in the first quarter, who kept them going and really kept them in the game so that Golden State didn't jump onto a big lead. And when it was after halftime yesterday, down 7 at the half, it was 17 in the second half from whom? LeBron? No, from Kyrie Irving. Scoring on a multitude of drives and shots with the right and the left, threes, runners, teardrops, baseline moves, just an array of offensive of skills that you can't really describe. You had to just watch. To me, Kyrie and LeBron, equally important factors. I would have given co-MVPs. I know it sounds like a cop-out, but I would have given them co-MVPs. Anthony is in Toledo. Anthony, you got an answer for me on that Kermit meme. What's the Kermit story? Help me out here.
All right, so the Kermit story is coming from Twitter and all the social media sites. He's called Kermit the Snitch, and he tends to pop up as he's coming along, and, you know, you see something happening. Oh, well, that's none of my business, though. Just quietly sips his tea and looks the other way.
Oh.
That's LeBron's answer to all that smack talk that was coming out early on in this series where, you know, they're saying he's got his feelings hurt. You know, he's looking at this. So to come out with the Ultimate Warrior and the Kermit the Snitch, that's the ultimate just back talk to the Warriors saying, it's none of my business, though. We won.
Oh, my God, that is epic. I did not understand it. I saw it, and I saw everybody commenting on both things. The Ultimate Warrior thing I got immediately, so I'm not a complete idiot. I'm only a partial idiot. The Kermit thing, I was like, wait a minute, what's the reference there? And as hard as I looked, I could not find anybody to explain exactly what the Kermit thing was. So it's kind of like, I didn't see anything, not my business. I'm just sitting here drinking tea kind of a thing.
Yep, that's pretty much what it is.
Love it, love it. Are you a Cavs fan, or who do you root for?
I'm actually a Celtics fan, but I do have my roots in Ohio, so I was happy to see the Cavs win, and especially in the manner that they win. It was just the biggest upset I could see coming.
Fair enough. Good stuff, man. Anthony, thanks for clarifying it for me. I appreciate the explanation.
Oh, not a problem. Thanks for having me on.
You got it, brother. Have a great one. All right, let's go to Jimmy in Toledo as well. Jimmy, you are on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. How you doing, Jimmy?
Hey, good, man. Listen, I just, when talking MVP, it's always kind of fun. And obviously, if you choose one over the other, then people think that you're degrading the other. Kyrie played amazing, but he fulfilled his role. He's a scoring point guard. He's not there for assists. LeBron's the rare talent. He's like Bird in the sense that he's a point forward.
Right.
And my thing is, it's the MVP. And they were down 3-1, and so much of what LeBron did, the team followed him, and he led on and off the court, in the locker room, before you even see them get out there and play. That was the key to winning that series, is before they even, when they left 3-1, they didn't lose it. They watched and they followed their leader. And LeBron's never gotten the kind of credit that he deserves. He's grown into that over the years, because you've been very critical of him in his previous stint in Cleveland as being selfish or this or that.
No. Hold on. I'll go get one better. I was very critical of him in this stint in Cleveland because of leading in the wrong direction. And what I mean by that
Hold on.
I'll let you finish in a second, but I just want to kind of say, remind everybody what I said, you know, last season when David Blatt was his coach and at the beginning of this season. That the leader of the team, which is clearly its best player, LeBron James, the two-time champion, the four-time MVP, and on down the line, when he just completely dismisses, you know, David Blatt in timeouts and goes over and sits and talks to Ty Lue while Blatt talks to the other four guys who are in, when he completely takes long stretches off in games on the defensive end, showing he doesn't have to because, you know, he's his own leader. He's his own boss. He doesn't have to do this. The message that that sends to other guys, I think it ultimately ended up in David Blatt losing his job because LeBron was leading in the wrong direction. So I will firmly own that because it was true. But I will also acknowledge that you're right. He led when it came time to turning this thing around and coming back from 3-1. He led in the right direction. There's no doubt that as LeBron goes, the Cavs go. From a playing standpoint, you know, performance standpoint, and from an attitude slash leadership or whatever other intangible standpoint that you want to say, he can lead you in the right direction or the wrong direction. And, yeah, he led them to the title. I firmly agree with that.
And that's why what he did over, what it's not almost, you can't almost, it's like a false choice. Well, they couldn't have won without Kyrie. Well, no kidding, but then that wasn't the choice this year. They had him. So it's really, you can't say one or the other because the game's too complex. Every single guy out there made tremendous contributions. Richard Jefferson had 9 rebounds. Coming out, the most important thing in the game, I thought, was how they reacted coming out of the gate when they went down by 7 at the end of the first half. And they came out, and J.R. Smith played a big role. Everything was that you can't, when you lead in every single statistical measurement across the board for both teams, you're the MVP. And Kyrie, his time's coming, but it's kind of a false choice to say, well, they couldn't have won it without Kyrie. Well,
now I'm going to still continue to disagree with you on this, Jimmy. I'm going to continue to disagree because it's about more than just the numbers. Like I said, literally deep into the second half yesterday, LeBron James was being completely outplayed by the guy he was guarding and the guy who was guarding him. Draymond Green was outplaying him by a wide margin. And if the Warriors had won that game, Draymond Green would have been there probably MVP because of the way he was playing against LeBron. It was Kyrie that took that second half over with 17 points, especially when LeBron was into that funk and was turning it over or taking those bad shots. I really think that from a performance standpoint, performing only, if his name had not been LeBron James and the story wasn't part of the story, meaning coming back from Miami to say I'm coming home again and I'm going to lead my team to their first title, I'm going to bring one to my hometown, and the whole nine yards that was the drama of, you know, the soap opera of sport here, if this had been in any other series with anybody else and it wasn't LeBron James and Kyrie did what he did, the way he did it, plus the dagger, the one that won the game, Kyrie Irving is your MVP. But because it isn't, and I have no problem with LeBron getting it at all, but I think that, I would have still made it a co-MVP situation.
That being said, Draymond was just insanely hot from the three-point line, and I don't think anybody could have stopped that. But
Hold on. It wasn't just three-point line hot. He had a LeBron stat line. He had a better LeBron stat line. He had 32, 15, and 9, which, you know, compared to LeBron's 27, 11, and 11. I mean, you could argue that even in defeat, Draymond's line was, so it wasn't just like he was a, you know, three-point shooter. He had 32, 15 boards and 9. And again, there was a point in that game where it was clear that 23 in gold was out, or white, or whatever they were yesterday, was outplaying the 23 in black until the very end. And again, LeBron hit that free throw to make a three-point game, a four-point game, which was so big he had to do that. And he hit a deep three of his own late, too. His own clutch gene was definitely on. But there was a point where Draymond was getting the best of him in a game seven.
I just think with LeBron, it's immeasurable. When he knows his jumper ain't working, he has a guy now that he can trust. And Ty Lue is instrumental in getting LeBron to say, look, you don't need Kyrie to be the typical prototypical assist disher. He's not that. He's more like Isaiah, man. He's a scorer. So use that when.
That's a good analogy. That's a
use
good analogy.
That when. And LeBron is unlike a lot of stars. He's like Bird and Magic in the sense that he can go and defer to another great scorer when everybody else. Because Golden State's defense is designed to stop whom? Not Kyrie Irving, but LeBron James. And so LeBron, instead of just, because I know what you're saying, I was having the same thing last night, come on, LeBron, you can't do the hero ball thing. You can't. Kyrie's got it going. Just keep it going. Keep it. And then he did that. He relinquished that. And then what did he do down the stretch? He played defense, and he made the greatest defensive play I have ever seen. And that was as much a key to winning that game down the stretch as the three-pointer was.
That was one of the signature moments, that block. There's no doubt about it.
I'll never forget that.
Yep, absolutely. Jimmy, great call, brother.
Hey,
thanks,
buddy.
Man. I appreciate the discussion. Loved every single second of it. All right, need to get a quick time out here. Hey, by the way, hey, Kush, do you know the answer to this question? Does David Black get a ring?
Ooh, good question.
We were talking about Andy Varejão.
I was just going to say, is that what I wonder about Varejão?
Because, I think they established early on that Varejão gets a ring no matter who wins the series. Varejão gets a ring because he played for the Cavs in this season,
sure,
in which they won the championship. I read that or heard that in multiple places. And
that
was true of Varejão.
Darn,
but
good question. But for Varejão, Blatt, yeah.
I mean, they were 33-11 and in first place under his guidance, his leadership, his tutelage, whatever you want to call it. And he, of course, was the coach that coached them, despite the absence of Love and Kyrie,
right,
to the finals last year and into six games, et cetera.
And Kyrie, of course, for a month and a half this year.
Yeah, so that's really interesting. I wonder how that'll play itself out. We'll have to keep our eyes on that. Hey, we need a timeout, but before we do, I want to remind you that we're always looking for ways to save money, right? Especially when it comes to auto repairs. At LKQ, pick your part. You can bring your own tools, pull the parts you need, and save big. It's that easy. Parts from over 1,000 vehicles to choose from in a clean, organized lot. At LKQ, pick your part. You can always find new inventory for your car or truck, from transmission to tires, rims to radiators. Visit LKQ, pick your part today. Find the part you need. LKQ, pick your part is always buying used vehicles. Call today, 1-800-962-2277, if you've got a used vehicle for sale. Do you know you can save up to 90% on your auto repairs when you do it yourself? That's a lot of money. At LKQ, pick your part, you're doing the work and you enjoy the savings. Like to work on your car and love to save money? Then visit LKQ, pick your part. And remember, at LKQ, pick your part, all our parts are always guaranteed. Always. Hagman Road, just off East Alexis Road in Toledo. LKQ, pick your part. Let's get a Sports Center. Come right back, get a few more phone calls, and wrap this bad boy up. On Championship Monday, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
More of the Afternoon Extravaganza now at 106.5theticket.com and podcast the show. Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
I got to tell you, in the spirit of LeBron James trolling the Warriors with the Ultimate Warrior t-shirt, I'm kind of doing some trolling of my own. I'm about to send one out to Aisha Curry with love. Wonder how Aisha Curry feels about LBJ's Ultimate Warrior shirt. I'm sure she'll tell us. Hashtag Ultimate Choke and hashtag 73 Meaningless Wins. She has made herself a part of the conversation by getting in there and calling the NBA rigged, poking the bear at LeBron James, all kinds of nonsense with her and her husband. And you know what? It feels even better to see the Cavaliers win their first NBA championship ever and the first championship of any kind in the city of Cleveland in professional sports since 1964, when it comes against a bunch of cocky, arrogant punks who've got big mouths and wives with even bigger mouths. She brought it on. She made herself a part of the conversation. So let's continue that conversation now that your husband completed their ultimate choke job. All right, so get online and follow us on Twitter, Sports Radio 106.5. You can find us there and on Facebook at 106.5 The Ticket. By the way, we always have our podcast available for you online at 106.5theticket.com, so you can listen to any show that you may have missed or interviews you want to hear again or whatever the case might be. The open or the montage that Jim Cushland put together today, featuring the Burning River Cleveland theme song and turning it from something melancholy and sad into something celebratory, that is available as a separate 5-minute podcast on its own on 106.5theticket.com.
So I figured, what the heck? I got multiple requests on Twitter and on the phones today, so I figured, what the heck? Let's throw it up there
absolutely.
As a separate podcast
which you can download, of course. It was brilliantly done. I'm sure a lot of people will enjoy that, so if you want to download that, it is there for you, available at 106.5theticket.com. All right, great stuff today. Obviously, we didn't pay any attention to any other sports because there was a championship up in the house last night. Thanks for celebrating it with us. We'll get back to more of a normal order of business tomorrow on the program. Until then, enjoy Drive Time with Miller coming up next, and we'll talk to you tomorrow at 3. Have a great one. Bye-bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.